This is Pure Decking, show number 517 for Thursday, April 27th, 1791. This is a show about stuff that interests me, like information security, rigging the game, and admitting the fact that the more I use macOS, the less I like it. I've got this little M1 Mac. I was playing with it for AI stuff, and I use it for the recording box, and trying to do anything kind of real on it, it's a major pain in the ass. I put some better screens on the KVM it's on, and it's like, oh, you want to do image scaling? No, you can set a lower resolution. You can't just do UI scaling. It's like, what the fuck? Apparently, that's only allowed if you bought the stupid expensive Apple monitors. So, it's like, okay.
You know, and the other monitors might randomly explode if you do shit with
them. Yeah, apparently. So, anyways, we have a madman. What is up, madman?
Oh, nothing much. Pretty much working, not working, occasionally drinking booze, general life stuff.
Ah, I gotcha. And we have an RU. What is up, RU?
So much, just watching my internet go in and out, in and out, in and out.
That's never fun.
I've been doing that for a couple of weeks now. It is what it is.
Well, you can get one of those cell modems and a router that'll automatically kick over to, you know, whatever the little hot spot is, 5G or whatever. But I don't know how feasible that actually is where you are now that I think about it. We've got several people at work who they can't get internet where they are, at least not reliable. So that's what they do is they have the DSL line or the cable line. And then they back it up with a 5G hotspot, and they're apparently expensive, but a router that'll flip over the internet if the cable line goes out. So
we're going Happy Samuel Morse's birthday.
I thought it was more obscure than that. Madman got it quick. Do you routinely Google the dates when I do the joke?
No.
I was just curious about that.
It's like, what's remotely tech oriented that happened
in the 1700s? Yes, Samuel Morse. It's not always tech oriented. Sometimes it's war. Sometimes it's just, you know, something I thought was cool or interesting. So, anyways, have we ever actually explained that joke on the show before?
A few times, I think.
Okay.
I don't know if it's been on the air, but it has been explained.
Yeah, for anybody who hasn't figured it out yet, when I throw the year out, I've gone to a couple of different This Day in History sites and picked a year. Because actually, that joke started because when I used to work in a grocery store, people still wrote checks, and they would always ask you the date when they're writing the check. So a couple of times, I'd give the correct day, the correct month, and some wild year. And the number of times I've gotten somebody to hand me a check, you know, dated from the 1970s or post-dated by 30 years.
Yep. Bird mentality, my friends.
And the funniest part is when you don't tell them what you've done and you just look at them and say, I think you messed up the year here. And they look at it and they say, oh, wait, why did I write that? I've only had one person say, but that's what you said. I'm like, well, I thought you would catch it. So, yep. And we wonder why people fall for social engineering. If you can get them to write the wrong year on a check. Anyways. Speaking of people who have no clue what they're doing, we can start with this Business Insider story here. And I'm not going to talk about this for the reason you think I'm talking about this. Well, you guys know me pretty well. It might be for the reason you think I'm talking about this. Let's see. It's from Business Insider. The headline is, employee says ChatGPT carries out 80% of his work duties, which allowed him to take on a second job, the report says. OpenAI's buzzy artificial intelligence tool, ChatGPT, is reportedly helping people hold down multiple jobs while keeping employers in the dark. Vice's motherboard interviewed several workers about how they were using ChatGPT in their daily lives. The workers' experience tied into the, quote, overemployment, unquote, trend, sparked earlier in the pandemic when many workers capitalized on enforced remote work by taking on a secret second job. In the shift, white-collar workers took on multiple jobs to boost their income. Ben, whose name was changed by Vice to preserve his anonymity, said he applied for a second job only after realizing he could use the AI tool at work. From Toronto, Ben helps financial technology companies market new products. He told Vice that ChatGPT had helped him do his job faster and more efficiently, which left him with more time. Earlier this year, Ben told Vice that he landed a second job after using the chatbot to write his cover letters. He told the news outlet to the release of GPT-4, an updated version of the AI model that underpins ChatGPT has made the jobs even easier. Quote, that's the only reason I got my job this year, unquote, Ben told Vice. Quote, ChatGPT does like 80% of my job, if I'm being honest, unquote. He added, quote, I can just tell it to create a story and it does it for me based on the context I give it, unquote. Ben told the outlet he still needs to tweak the text at times. He said he even used a chatbot to write messages to his manager, prompting the bot to write them in lowercase letters so they appeared organic. So, the question isn't, oh, is somebody using ChatGPT to cheat and get two jobs? No, no. They found a tool, they're using it, and they're able to perform multiple jobs. The problem that I foresee with this is, one, employers aren't going to be in the dark about this for very long. It's going to become expected to use these chatbots to get their work done that much faster. And instead of, you know, keeping a normal workload and just being able to work a second job or play video games in the background while you're doing your main job or whatever people are doing.
They're going to up the benchmarks.
They're going to up the benchmarks. They're going to require you to do, you know, 200% more work in a day because the chatbot does it for you. If you're working that much faster, well. And that's going to, I mean, one, you'll probably see downsizing because of that, because why do you need five copywriters if one in the chatbot can get the same amount of work done? And two, this guy was talking about the chatbot wrote his cover letter. Now, he still says he's still reviewing it. But how long before somebody's using the chatbot to get jobs they are wildly unqualified for? And
already happening.
I know. That's my point.
I'm going to go with chatbot didn't start that.
Well,
and a lot of padded resumes, the reason you can get away with padding them and getting the job is about 99% of jobs want things that aren't necessary for that job. Like, I've seen several jobs just say college education, but they don't give you a degree requirement. They don't need a college education. Or 12 years experience. No, you need to know the basics of the job, probably. Because most jobs, you need to have an idea of what you're doing, and then the company's going to be doing something different than most of your companies similar to that have done. They'll be close, but not the same.
My favorite's always when you see tech job postings where they're asking for multiple years of experience in a product that's only been out for a year or so. It's like,
yeah,
you know, 5 years of experience. Wasn't that released like last year? I mean, but I think the benchmark's going to move. I think the employees are going to start expecting you to be using this. And, you know, for the person doing the chat bot, you know, maybe they'll get a pay rise out of it, but you know, at the same time, you'll see people lose their jobs too. Now, long-term economics, is that a good thing? Is that a bad thing? It kind of goes both ways. Short-term is going to be kind of a mess. But
short-term will be a mess, but long-term, shit will probably get cheaper.
Yeah, probably. But here's the other thing to keep in mind. ChatGPT right now, because you know these people are using just the free demo version. I'm sure you could work out an agreement with OpenAI if you were a sizable company want to use their tool. But they're taking everything you plug into it and keeping it as training data for the language models. So if you're using ChatGPT to do your job, well, at the very minimum, you're probably violating all the information handling policies of your employer, because ChatGPT isn't just processing what you punch into it to give you a response. It's saving all that. And there have been a few instances already where people have figured out that some of the source text that's coming out of ChatGPT is coming from internal documents of other companies, because obviously somebody's fed it in there to make updates or something. I'd have to go find the exact story again, but there was an article about people saying their policies were getting spat out of ChatGPT because obviously somebody had been using ChatGPT to update them. So, you know, you need to be aware. I'm not saying don't use it. I'm saying be aware that anything you plug into that thing is being logged, stored, and could potentially be spat back out at somebody else using the thing.
Yeah, I'm going to start wondering how many HIPAA violations are coming out of this.
Oh, you fucking heaps, madman. Company secrets that have been lost.
We've blocked it where I work right now. We're trying to figure out what we can do as an alternative because we've got a bunch of people wanting to use it, marketing people mainly. But, you know, right now we're saying until we figure out, you know, how you could safely use it and what the policies around it would be, that's a no. It's a block. You're not allowed to use it. And, I mean, you think about the rate that this stuff has been, you know, growing this year. Well, a couple of years from now, it'll just be on your phone anyways, right? How long before Apple or Google cuts an agreement to replace their voice AI backend with this thing? You know, hook it into Siri or the Google voice.
If they're not already in contract, it won't be long.
So
it'll be a feature. It'll be a selling feature of whoever's phone it's on.
Right.
I think that ChatGTP will become a monthly subscription if you want to use it.
Oh, they're already talking about that. It's going to be like $20 or $30 a month. Cause
yeah, there's going to be a pro model.
Gladly pay it.
There's going to be a pro model, a business model, home model, a mobile model, a car model. You know, and you're going to pay for each one. It won't be just a license across the board.
Well, that's one of the reasons I was looking into running my own, is just the simple data security of it. It's like, if I want to use it to play with models and stuff for work, I don't necessarily want everything I type into the thing logged and, you know, potentially spat back out at somebody else, especially if it is something that's, you know, similar.
I mean, you want to really read your user agreement for it.
Oh, yeah.
I was just saying, like, especially if you're going to use it for work-based stuff.
So I have a feeling we're going to start seeing people get fired. Not for using it, but for feeding, you know, violation of company information policy over it.
Yeah, I've been listening to Suave tech around with it. I'm just going to nope out of the AI shit. It's just another level of crap I don't need in my life.
Oh, I'm going to play with it, but mostly I just want to understand it. Well, yeah, I'm already got people at work joking about, oh, well, you know, because you said you got to work on these automations. Hey, use the chatbot; it'll speed it up. It's like, I'm not.
Yeah, but feeding that I'm not going to know what I'm fucking doing.
Well, that's the other thing, and that's what we were just saying is, like, you think this guy really knows everything that's coming out of this thing for the two companies he's working at? I mean, it routinely gets things wrong We know this. They call it hallucinating.
Give it whatever pretty fucking word you want. It's just wrong.
Yeah, that's my point. So I'm a little worried. We're going to have a lot of people who don't know how the system works. They don't know what's going on under it. They're just going to blindly trust whatever comes out of the damned computer. I mean, I know that they already do that, but...
I'm listening to more Major yesterday, and he's doing this whole word salad, and I'm like, what the fuck does that even mean? I know they're words, but he had no idea what he was even talking about. And even he didn't know what he was talking about. Like, so it's a learning process. We're all going along together with it. But it's just a level of complexity I don't think I want, let alone need.
Considering that you don't... I understand the data model. I understand, you know, the idea of the neural network at a fairly high level. But, if I had to explain how it worked, how it was coming up with guessing the next word as well as it does, I couldn't do it.
No.
Nobody can. Nobody knows how it actually works.
They don't even know how it works.
It's a self-trained box. You know, yeah, we can look at the program, and yeah, we can see how it's trained up its data set, and you can go look at the data set, but how it correlates to what you're getting out of it, I mean, it wasn't designed that way. It was generated.
Your guess is as good as mine how it's doing it. But it's already everywhere.
It is. And I mean,
No stopping it.
People are calling for a pause on AI development. Good fucking luck.
You can't pause tech. I mean, I know it's going to be everywhere. I just want to know that I can identify it when it's in the open environment, that I'm not tricked into thinking that that's a person.
Well, that's going to be the real problem right there.
Yeah.
If you read OpenAI's agreement, it says you're supposed to clearly identify any content that came from ChatGPT when you publish, or if you do anything with it, you're supposed to clearly identify it came from it. Most people aren't doing that now, are they?
That would defeat the purpose of using it for most of the things I've heard.
So I don't know, man. It's going to happen. We need to understand it, but it's at the same time, it's going to be a mess. So yeah, I think we're going to see a slew of people in positions that they don't actually understand. Well, okay. There's a great scene. I think it's in the book Demon. It's either Demon or the sequel to it. I don't remember if it's part one or part two. But in the book, the main character goes into a fast food restaurant, orders a burger and fries, right? And they then ring him up and tell him it's going to be like $20 for this sandwich he's ordered. And he said, no, that's not right. And he goes, look at your menu. The price of the sandwich is like $5.95, the price of the fries is $2, the price of the drink is another $1.95. When you add all that up, you don't get $20, you get $11.50. And the guy doesn't understand, and he tries to explain to him, it's like, no, look, just do the math. He goes, well, the computer says it's 20-something. And he goes, no, look, that's not... And finally he goes, well, I got to get my manager. So he gets the manager. And he says, okay, good. Yeah, the total on the machine's wrong. The manager looks at him, looks at the computer, goes, $20. I'm probably not remembering the numbers correctly. But, I mean, yeah, even the manager just, blindly followed what the computer told him to do.
Yeah.
I mean, you already see that now. It's just, not quite of a blatant example as in the book. And I think with these chatbots, we're going to see it a lot more. So
I mean, I can't wait till it starts making medical diagnosis fuck-ups.
It's like, well, somebody loaded the ROM from Dr. Mario in there, and the robot just kept shoving pills down the old lady's throat.
Just the society stuck in a loop of trust. Start doubting some things, people.
Wasn't being a skeptic supposed to be the cool thing back in the day?
Well, back in the day, it was the thing they taught you in school. Trust but verify. Okay? Just because the book says doesn't mean the book is right. Go look at yourself.
So, anyways, that's... I'm not really sure what else to say about that other than just it's you know, may you live in interesting times. Somebody must have thrown that curse at us. So,
oh, dude, it's fantastic. I mean, scary as hell, but goddamn, breakneck speed. God damn it. Like, the brakes, there are no brakes.
Oh, no.
Everything's moving at such speed. I would not want to be... like a 70-year-old guy having to try and keep up with this shit. You know what I mean? Your last couple of years of working life, and this comes down the pipe? Like, fuck that. And I'm not just talking about ChatGTP. I'm talking about everything.
What do you mean, everything? Just internet in general? I mean...
Well, the internet, as we said last week, is now no longer... a human hive mind. It's now a commercial entity.
Yeah, no, the classic internet of the 90s is lost. It's
dead.
Never coming back.
I'm a big fan of cash, but no one wants to pay cash anymore, and some businesses flat out won't take it. Banks don't take money anymore.
Yeah, that went well.
I
don't know of a bank that doesn't take money. I'm going to need this story.
Oh, you come over to my place, madman. I'll take you down to my fucking bank branch. We'll try and give them some cash. They'll tell us to fuck off and go out to the front to the machine because they don't handle cash. Dude, cars are so over complex now. You've got a new car, Warps. Does it have a key ignition?
No.
Well, there's your problem. There's a big problem right there.
It has a little spot that if the battery in your thing isn't working, you can put it in there and it'll read the RFID tag and still let you start the car. I have a key. There is a key. I can remove the key from the fob, and that will open the door, but it will not actually start the car.
It's just in the breakneck speed.
It has a settings menu in the on the touch screen, some of which is for drive, you know, like handling things like cruise control and how it drives, that rivals my fucking iPad.
Yeah, just everything, man. It's just so fucking fast, and don't even get me started on electric cars and the power grid and, you know, the insanity that's going on with that, let alone the amount of wars that seem to have spun up in the last 6 months. I mean, half of Africa is going at it again.
And
it's going to be a massive amount.
Can you name a five-year period in the last 100 where half of Africa wasn't going at it?
I couldn't, madman, but I'd have to go do some research, or maybe I'll ask ChatGTP.
the answer is there hasn't been.
No, I know, it's always a conflict zone, but these new ones have spun up now. It's going to be mass famine again, like the fucking late 80s, early 90s. It's breakneck speed, man, everything. And ChatGTP is just one of the fastest right now. I mean, the schools have no idea how to get the shit out of the kids' hands. And I'm like, why try and stop them? Maybe help them to figure out what it is. That would be a better benefit to children. You know, teach them how to use it. It's not a magic sky fucking god. So that's the next one. It's trying to convince people it's not alive.
Teach them critical thinking before you stick them on the computer. I don't think they should really be messing with computer skills until middle school or later.
Well, the real question is how long before, instead of teaching programming or even typing in schools, they start teaching prompt writing?
Oh, you want to scare a teacher? Tell them ChatGTP is going to take their job. Because it will.
Actually, when we were in school, they were already teaching prompt writing. It was how to refine your searches.
Oh, yeah, they did do that.
Yeah.
I completely forgot.
Remember Google used to have a competition for primary schools who could find the fastest page where they're going or something like that way back in the day.
And as far as putting the brakes, and if you choose to, just we haven't chosen to.
Well, not everybody.
For examples, I'll throw out the Amish, the Hutterites, and the Mennonites.
Okay, but yep. Not everyone has done it at the same time. The people calling for a pause on AI are trying to get everyone to stop at the same time. It's not going to happen. Yeah, no. If you want to ignore it, go for it. Just be aware you're ignoring something that's going to have some impact.
ChatGTP is the thrasher of the Industrial Revolution, dude. Look at how many white-collar jobs are going to go. You know, I'm just glad ChatGTP can't change spark plugs. Not yet, anyway.
Little robot arm. It'll happen.
Yeah, but the robotics is a little bit way away. But, you know, I hang around with a lot of gearheads and shit, and most of them are like, well, electric cars, come along, that's the end of my job. Fuck it. They're not switching over.
But you think about it, though. Doctors have been doing surgery remotely with robots. So it's not that far of a stretch to say, okay, instead of doing surgery on a person remotely, like it's a video game, what if we did it on a car? And the insides of cars are a little bit more standardized than the insides of people. So, whereas a skilled mechanic is still always going to be better, how much mundane shit could a AI tied to a couple of robot arms do in a garage?
Probably a lot. I mean, you can fix anything right now with YouTube. And a six-pack of beer.
We had a look of what it would cost to just do an oil change with using robot arms.
Oh, yeah?
And identifying the vehicle, things like that. Way too expensive. The robotics you need, that's your high-end high-end factory stuff.
Yeah.
Well, that's very specialized work. And the robot's only going to be able to do one thing. You know, do the oil change on multiple different versions of cars. You know what I mean? Like, it just wasn't viable for a small workshop. Or even if you could, you know, average out how many oil changes you could do in a day using the robot, it still wouldn't pay for itself.
Okay, well, I mean, again, maybe not today, but...
Again, it's coming.
It's not going to fix everything, but the routine shit, oil change, filters...
Well... Look what drones have done. Drones have absolutely revolutionized the oil business just with pipeline inspections alone. Same with the rail industry. One of the reasons there's a lot of train derailments right now, they're trying to perfect the technology of looking for shit with drones.
But they miss the tracks being so deformed that they're... Yeah, okay.
They're still training the software, man. You know, like they're still training it to detect cracks in pipelines. Same with high voltage power lines. No longer do you need a team to survey them anymore. You just send the drone up. It whips along at 80 miles an hour, and then you just slow the footage back down and check for defects.
Dude, I was watching a video the other day. It was a guy showing how they do inspections at high voltage substations. The contactors they use for those things. Oh my God.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, you know, it's just a big piece of metal, right? But it's out in the open. And when they open the contact and it arcs off, you realize just how much voltage is going through that open.
Oh, yeah, it's fantastic.
Holy shit.
Uh-huh. Makes a hell of a Jacob's ladder.
Oh, yeah.
But, yeah, that's what I mean. Breakneck speed, man. Breakneck speed. I mean, the mining industry is, hell, they just park a fucking semi-trailer down now and, you know, one man can set up and break ground for a new mine. All on his own, because everything could be run remotely. A hive trucks and shit like that. One loader. It's not. And we met a guy. What probably 7-8 years ago who was setting this technology up for mining when we were out at Emerald Way.
Well, it's got to be more advanced now.
Well, that's actually interesting because, you know, not too long ago I read the Bobverse books, you know, the We Are Legion, We Are Bob books.
Yeah.
And one of the concepts in that book is that they have what they call automated machine intelligences, or AMIs, which in the book sound very comparable to what, you know, we're starting to do with GPT and things like that. So, you know, of course, the book's 100 years in the future. So the idea was they would hand off the tedious bit to the AMIs that didn't care to do it, and then they would do the planning steps. And you're kind of describing that with the one guy driving the automated fleet out and getting a mine started by himself just by running the programs.
Well, it's all surveyed by drone, spotted by GPS, rolled out by AI, and supervised by a human. It's been tried and tested technology on farm equipment for years now.
Well, I knew farm equipment was steering, doing a lot of automation with regard to running a tractor to, you know, pull crop or.
Well, I was talking to some old farmers
for some of that stuff too.
About 2 weeks ago at an event, and they were talking about hive mind harvesters doing whole wheat paddocks in one day because you've got one guy driving a harvester and everything else is running with the hive mind. Just following. It's insane.
No, wait till somebody makes a fleet of automated hive mind killdozers. That'll be interesting.
Yeah, we're sort of seeing that already on the... the Ukraine war with their killer drones. There was a better example of hive drone technology when it come to war with Azerbaijan versus Turkey, I think it was, 3 years ago. Azerbaijan lost every piece of heavy artillery and tank in one day due to drone technology.
Wow. Well, yeah, they just weren't prepared for that. They were probably trained in the more classic World War II style of fighting.
Well, yeah, they're all dug in, you know, like front line stuff, ready to go. And these drones came out of nowhere, bang, got them all, lost it all in one day. I think that war lasted like 3 or 4 days. But you're seeing those drones be used in the Ukraine. Not as much as that, but they are using them to, like, pretty much kamikaze into fucking heavy artillery.
Well, there was the other video that came out of Ukraine with that automated turret they were using where they were controlling it with a Steam Deck, which was just comical. I mean, portable machine joysticks? About, I mean, you know.
We talked about that, but that was Syria was one of the first times we saw one of them. They were using a PlayStation controller.
Yeah.
That was brilliant.
It makes perfect sense that you would... The controller's a good interface for that. It's just, you know, disturbing as hell at the same time.
Anyways, and the kids are good at it. Trailing off.
We fell down the rabbit hole a little while ago. So
Next story.
Next story. This is from DevClass. This is one you sent me, are you? The EU's proposed Cyber Resilience Act, which aims to, quote, bolster cybersecurity rules to ensure more secure hardware and software products, unquote, could have severe unintended consequences for open source software, according to leaders in the open source community. The proposed act can be described as CE marking for software products and has four specific objectives. One is to require manufacturers to improve the security of products with digital elements, quote, through the whole life cycle, unquote. Second is to offer a, quote, coherent cybersecurity framework, unquote, by which to measure compliance. Third is to improve the transparency of digital security and products. And fourth is to enable customers to, quote, use products with digital elements securely, unquote. The draft legislation includes an impact assessment that says for software developers and hardware manufacturers, it will increase the direct compliance costs of new cybersecurity requirements, conformity assessment, and documentation and reporting obligations. This extra cost is part of a total cost of compliance, including the burden on business and public authorities, estimated at 29 billion euros, or 31.54 billion dollars. And consequently, higher prices for consumers. However, the legislators foresee a cost reduction from security incidents estimated at 180 to 290 billion euros annually. Maybe. There's a lot of money lost to fraud and security incidents, but frameworks like this usually end up being box-checking exercises and not actually contributing to really secure software. Although a baseline's always a good thing. The question is, though, how can free software developers afford the cost of compliance when lack of funding is already a critical issue for many projects? Mike Mullenvich, a director of the Eclipse Foundation, said it is, quote, deeply concerned that the CRA could fundamentally alter the social contract which underpins the entire open source ecosystem. Open source software provided for free for any purpose, which can be modified and further distributed for free, but without warranty or liability to the authors, contributors, or open source distributors. Legally altering this arrangement through legislation can reasonably be expected to cause unintended consequences to the innovation economy in Europe, unquote. So, I guess to better explain what's going on here, Europe is trying to set a bunch of standards for developing software that you have to meet if you're going to sell software. Well, open source has no ability to meet these standards because these are going to be expensive. It's sort of like the, you know, Gramm-Leach-Breevy Act, some of the other laws that were passed in the wake of Enron, where if you can't afford the $1 million plus a year of required auditing, you can't run a financial company, period, because of the legal requirements in place. Madman, correct me on my numbers there. It's about $1 million a year in basic audit costs, and it goes up from there based on size. Am I wrong?
It's up there.
Yeah. It's like, you can't do a little two-man accounting shop anymore because the requirements because of Enron make it to where the compliance costs are so absurd that you just, you know, if you're not making $1 million a year to cover the overhead, you know, that's not even you're not even making money yet just because the costs in that. So all these security requirements that the CRA is putting on requirements basically is going to make it either A, impossible for open source software to comply with it. So they might just say we don't comply with the CRA. This is not a sold product. You know, we still say it's under the thing of no liability, but the law potentially could put liability back on the makers of the software if they're not meeting these security benchmarks when distributing it. And it's kind of an open question because I don't think the law is really written with the idea that open source exists. You know, they're written very much from the point of view of, well, if Microsoft sells you a version of Windows that has security holes in it, Microsoft ought to be responsible for that. But the question is, though, how can free... I think I read that. He sets what he expects will be required of the Eclipse Foundation, including developing, documenting, and implementing policies and procedures for, quote, every project at the Eclipse Foundation, unquote. Milunkovich also notes that the CRA aims to restrict, quote, unfinished software, unquote, so that it is not available on the market for purposes other than testing, unquote. Use of interim builds and software that is under intense development is common in the open source community, and licenses are currently not restricted to testing. The Open Source Initiative has submitted feedback to the European Commission asking for further work on the open source exemption to this requirements within the body of the Act. The OSI would like responsibility for compliance to be removed from any author or actor who is not directly commercial or who's not a direct commercial beneficiary of the deployment. So yeah, what they're saying is if you're using open source software, the company using it should be responsible, not the original.
Not the
office.
Developer,
right? Which, given what I think the goal of this is, again, they're wanting to put. The people who wrote this bill are probably thinking that they're putting the onus back on Microsoft, Google, Apple, you know, the big boys, the ones who they think can afford to fix this stuff, as opposed to, you know, the companies running it. And, of course, they're not going to want to do that for open source. They don't want that exemption in there. They're going to want to say, no, the company's not responsible if the software's shoddy. The people who wrote it are responsible. Which basically means that you could not use open source software in a commercial setting, period. That would be a problem given how much Linux is out there these days on the internet for hosting and automation. The open source advocate and OSI standard director, Simon Phillips, said the legislation, quote, may harm open source, unquote, and that the current text of the legislation will cause extensive problems for open source software, partly because of the ambiguities in the wording, and partly because it does not recognize the way open source communities actually function. Olaf Kolkman, executive-level advisor to the Internet Society, also expressed concern, saying that the regulation should be modified to make it clear that software produced under an open-source license and distributed on a not-for-profit basis is out of scope for the regulation. It is a complex issue because the use of open-source software in the digital elements of the product is commonplace. Brian Fox, former chair of the Apache Maven project and now CTO and co-founder of DevOps company Sonatype, said the legislation might result in, quote, central NPM, PyPI, and countless other repositories suddenly being inaccessible to the European Union, which would be disastrous for both the EU and the ecosystem as a whole, unquote. At the same time, he said that the draft law is, quote, otherwise a very admirable piece of legislation that aims to increase the cybersecurity posture within digital products in a more advanced way than many of its counterparts, unquote. The question now is whether the EU can preserve the good intent of the legislation without dire consequences fueled by open source. So, And like I said, the law is primarily written targeting the big boys, right? They're not really, I don't think they're intending to make open source developers responsible for this stuff. But that's kind of the way it's written right now. So it's not so much that it's bad intentions, but it probably is bad law. Because Go ahead.
It's just law written by people who don't understand the product that they're trying to write laws for.
Well, it assumes the pure commercial internet. You know, nothing on the internet is free. Everything is running on software written by a multinational, multi-billion-dollar company. And you don't own anything. You just live there.
That's what I mean. They have no fucking idea how any of this shit works.
I think that's the problem. I think they just don't have anybody on there who truly understands it. And yeah.
I don't know. It's just law that's written maybe so they can threaten Microsoft and the big boys with something every now and then.
Yeah.
For a shakedown when they need some money.
I think that's exactly what it is. I mean, they shake down Google every once in a while and Meta for news articles. They've been doing that for a while.
Throw the M word around. You're a monopoly. Don't make us break you up.
Does anybody care about what Beijing is trying to do to OpenAI?
No, but is there really a way of... The only way to really regulate things is to put liability on someone.
Yeah.
So, how would you increase internet security and not put liability on the writer of the on the actual writer of the code?
If it's open source, you put it on the commercial entity that's implementing it. As an example, a lot of Google's infrastructure is running on Linux, is running on open source code. Now, they've written a lot of their own software as well. I think a lot of their internal web hosting is their own software. They've got a lot of their own libraries that they've written. But, you know, a lot of their code for the longest time was based on Python. I think good parts of it still are, although a lot more is written in Go these days, which is also an open source project. Android is based on open source, with Linux kernel and open source Java bindings. So if you want to say that software distributed by Google is, Google's not responsible. They're implementing open source code. Do you want to say Google's not responsible? It's some guy in his basement maintaining some random library that they implemented that's got a vulnerability? I would think it would be Google that would be responsible for what happens, because they're the ones who implemented it. They're the ones who used it. The difference being that commercial software usually comes with kind of a service level agreement, right? One of the reasons that my company and yours, Madman, doesn't implement open source very often is because they want a service level agreement. They want the agreement between companies that, you know, hey, they're responsible for this, we're responsible for this. It's laid out in when you buy it, commonly called the support contract. So by the same token, you might say that under what the EU is proposing, that Red Hat should be responsible because they're commercially selling a distribution. And that's probably the right way to go, because Red Hat's whole company is based on supporting open source software in these commercial environments. And again, you would want it to fall on Red Hat, not random developer who happened to write a Python library that somebody used, right? So, I think the law is well-intentioned. It's just poorly written from what I've seen. I don't think that they're intending to kill open source. I think they're just not thinking about it. They're just thinking that everything comes from Microsoft, Google, and Apple, and they want to hold them responsible for security problems, not, you know, the random small business that just got pwned, right?
Yeah.
So, because you're right, you do have to put responsibility on somebody. It's just, it gets awkward when, you know, some Fortune 500 company is saying, no, it's not our fault. It's, you know, dude in his basement over there who happened to write a library. It's like, that's a little weird. Because that would effectively make commercial use of open source software untenable, to the point that most people would stop publishing open source software for fear of legal liability in Europe.
Then all you would have left is just the commercial software.
Well, hopefully nobody's that evil in the EU and actually trying to make that happen. Who are we kidding? Somebody is. There's somebody who's thought that.
You're using that word accountable. I don't think our betters know what that word actually means. Accountable.
Yeah, that only applies to the little people.
I was going to say, only you and I are accountable.
What's next?
This China story is kind of funny, so we'll do it real quick. Seoul, 5 months after Chat. This is from the Sydney Morning Herald. 5 months after ChatGPT set off an investment frenzy over artificial intelligence, Beijing is moving to rein in China's chatbots, a show of the government's resolve to keep a tight regulatory control over technology that could define an era. The Cyberspace Administration of China this month unveiled draft rules for so-called generative AI software systems like the one behind ChatGPT. They can formulate text and pictures in response to a user's questions and prompts. According to the regulations, companies must heed the Chinese Communist Party's strict censorship rules, just as websites and apps have to avoid publishing materials that besmirch Chinese leaders or rehash foreign history. Rehashes forbidden history, sorry. The content of AI systems will need to reflect socialist core values and avoid information that undermines state power or national unity. Companies will also have to make sure their chatbots create words and pictures that are truthful and respect intellectual property, and will be required to register their algorithms, the software brands behind the chatbots, with regulators. In other words, China is demanding the source code. The rules are not final, and the regulators may continue to modify them, but experts said engineers building AI services in China were already figuring out how to incorporate the edicts into their products. around the world, governments have been wowed by the power of chatbots and blah, 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 blah. So, yeah, China's wasting no time here before passing a law saying that, you know, if you're operating a chatbot in China, it must toe the party line.
Yeah. So you got to be careful of the chatbots you get on your product now that says made in China.
Yeah, really.
It may not have your best interests at heart.
Okay, OpenAI is out of San Francisco. I was trying to remember where they were.
Not much better than China, dude.
No, I know, but they're not actually in China, because I was just waiting to see if OpenAI had a Chinese division, because it's like, you know, ChatGPT-4 just starts talking about Dear Leader.
Oh, asking about Tiananmen Square and it just kills itself.
It's like, so, can you compare Xi Jinping to Winnie the Pooh and your computer just explodes? Okay, I guess we're going to skip these last two articles. I'm just looking at the clock here. We did start a touch late, so we'll just look at this one real quick. This is from the Register. Microsoft is offering to stop bundling the web conferencing and messaging app Teams with the Office software to stave off the threat of a full-blown antitrust investigation by EU regulators. Industry figures... Of course it's antitrust. I mean, of course it's a monopolistic behavior. Microsoft cloned Slack and WebEx, or Zoom, pick one, when they put Teams together, got about 80% of the functionality of either of them, and then gave it away for free with Office 365. I mean, I know my company stopped paying for WebEx, Zoom, and Slack and just said everyone's on Teams now, because of course they did. It was cheaper. They already pay for Office 365. Why wouldn't they just tell everyone to use Teams? I mean, Madman, your company?
What you're talking about? We've always used Teams. We would never do anything untoward or whatever. I just want Skype to come back and be open.
I'd love to get the original Skype, you know, the one before Microsoft bought it, open sourced, the one that was actually peer-to-peer.
Yeah.
That thing worked great.
It did what it said.
I mean, the audio quality, even TeamSpeak today with the best settings and running my own server and a decent data center and all that, we still don't have the audio quality near what Skype was doing when it was peer-to-peer.
I know, right?
So.
I wonder why that technology died.
Microsoft. Everything from Microsoft.
But no one else picked up anything else like it.
Well, Skype never open sourced their code, right? So their peer-to-peer technology, Microsoft owns it. You can't. That's the other thing, though, is I think they had. I don't remember if they had patents or not, but if you were to re-implement the old Skype protocol, you know, Microsoft could sue you, at least for copyright, if nothing else. Now, if you did. There's open source re-implementations of it, but I don't think any of them have gotten the real attention or time that Skype got. And that's also a convenience thing, right? You know, everyone's already using them. They're kind of settled on the handful of stuff they're using, you know, Discord and, you know, stuff on your phone. So trying to get people to look at Skype, you know, something like a Skype again. Well, hell, you know, think about the way you guys react every time I start experimenting with something other than TeamSpeak.
To be fair, it's generally just me.
Yeah, but you have influence, are you?
I wouldn't say that. Everybody's got their own mind.
Yeah, oh, most of them leave their mind on autopilot and just say, well, you didn't like it, so...
No, dude, I just have this... Like, I get it, you guys love fucking around with different technologies and stuff. Not a big fan of changing shit every couple of months, so well, I made my stance early on.
And to be fair... The current platform works. It is hard to beat. Works.
We have fucked around with a few different programs, and you know what? We've never, ever gone for a better one. It's always been worse, and we've reverted back.
I'd love to give Mumble another shot, but nobody else wants to fuck with it.
Stick Mumble up your fucking ass. We're not doing Mumble again. It doesn't fucking work. It never will work. It's terrible. It's probably a shit ton better now, but I don't care to find out.
Well, I guess there's always just giving up and going to Discord.
Fuck yourself.
Fuck Discord. Do you ever try to uninstall Discord?
I never installed it.
Me either.
We read the articles on decking. It's like, oh wow, look at all the shit it does. If I use Discord, it's wrapped up in a virtual machine in a web or in a web browser in a virtual.
Yeah.
Machine.
Yeah, it's the herpes of the voice chat systems. Uh-huh. I mean, you think you got it under control, then you get this random breakout, and you have to go back to the doctor and be like, I swear I haven't done it again, it's just that same problem, and it came back.
I haven't been to
Tijuana, and I don't know about a donkey show. Can you please fix my crotch rot?
Yep.
I Discord don't think we're talking about the same thing here anymore, but that's okay.
Yeah, Discord is that bad.
But, so they're talking about basically unbundling Teams from the business versions of Office to make the EU leave them alone. They may only do it in the EU, since that's the only place that's giving them shit about it. But Slack has definitely claimed that what Microsoft did with Teams was just, you know, flat out, you know, monopolistic behavior, and they're right. I mean, anybody
when has Microsoft ever been monopolistic? Come on.
Ever since they figured out what lobbying was in the late 90s. So.
Oh, they were monopolistic before that. They just started lobbying when Congress decided, you know, we can regulate you. And they're like, oh, we can stop developing software and we can pay you. And you're cheaper than our developers.
Yep.
All right. Last story. I'll just knock it in real quick before we go do dojo. Japanese company says, this is from spaceflightnow.com. Japanese company says commercial spacecraft landed on the moon or crashed on moon landing attempt. So apparently the Japanese just threw something at the moon rather than landing on it. Whoops! A small spacecraft attempting to become the first privately funded probe to accomplish a controlled landing on the moon likely fell to the lunar surface after running out of fuel Tuesday, according to the Japanese company ISpace, which managed the mission. The Japanese company lost communication with the Hakuto R lander moments before its scheduled touchdown in Atlas Crater, a 54-mile-wide impact basin on the near side of the moon. The spacecraft was on final approach for an automated landing at 12:40 p.m. EDT Tuesday. Scenes broadcast from ISpace's Tokyo Control Center showed nervous looks on the faces of engineers gathered to monitor telemetry from the spacecraft. Smiles and chatter among ISpace executives turned into silent waiting as ground controllers stopped receiving the live data stream from the Hakuto R lander, a car-sized spacecraft that launched in December from Cape Canaveral on top of a SpaceX Falcon 9 rocket. Takeshi Hakamada, founder and CEO of ISpace, said in remarks a few minutes after the landing attempt that ground teams received communication from the spacecraft until the very end of the descent sequence, but were unable to reestablish contact. Quote, so we have to assume that we could not complete the landing on the lunar surface, unquote, Hakamada said. A data display on ISpace Live webcast of the landing attempt appeared to show the last confirmed telemetry of the Hakuto R spacecraft indicated the lander was at an altitude of 90 meters, or about almost 300 feet, and descending at 33 kilometers per hour, or about 20 miles per hour. If successful, a landing would have made ISpace the first company to safely put a privately funded spacecraft on the surface of another planetary body. In a statement later Tuesday, ISpace reported that a successful landing was not achievable. So it likely crashed into the surface of the moon. Sorry, guys.
Now, the company that bought you the toy line Transformers, it's the same fucking company who launched that.
Is it really?
Yeah, it is.
I was going to make the Harry Carey joke, but...
And I'm going to give you a 9 out of 10 pronunciation on that Japanese name there.
I, you know, back in the day, watched a lot of anime, so...
It shows.
That's a bad thing, isn't it? Okay. Anybody have anything else on the...
No, I just wanted to add that it was a toy line company.
That's great. That's absolutely great. It would have landed on the surface and turned into a truck. Wait, what?
It actually did have a neat looking rover.
Well, I mean, it's Japanese. I'm certain it looked awesome. Didn't work, well, that little, I'm sure it looked great.
They had a little car they were going to drive around.
Little robots great. Come out, form a Gundam? I mean, you know.
That would have been even better.
Or a little Voltron? I mean, you know.
Oh, yeah, now we're starting to make space exploration great again.
Oh, are you going to go with the Tiger or the Lion Voltron or the car Voltrons?
The original cars. Car set, of course. I got to age myself.
As long as it doesn't look like the weird ass shit from Power Rangers Turbo, I'm good. So, that was like what the fuck? But anyways, so the last thing I have is actually a link to a Microsoft knowledge base of all things. So, messing around with some of the AI stuff and the Windows subsystem for Linux, Microsoft really wants you to do everything through the store with a Microsoft account. I never hooked this machine up to the to a Microsoft account. I've made a point of not doing such a thing. And they kind of bury in the documentation how to set up the WSL on a Windows machine without hooking it into the store. So this page has the instructions. They have all the command line instructions and nice, easy copy and paste commands for PowerShell to turn on the virtual machine feature and set up the WSL Windows feature, WSL2. And then they'll tell you, oh, go download it from the store. But you just scroll down a little bit and they'll have all the links for the actual package you can download just straight through your browser. And install it that way, just by double-clicking on it after you download it. And then that way, because I had to blow away and restart my my Linux image was all fucked up. I don't quite know what happened to it, because I hadn't used it in a while on my Windows box. But it's got links for Ubuntu, SUSE, Kali, Fedora, Penguin, Alpine, right there in the page where you can just download them straight up, not going through the fucking store. And no Microsoft account required. It's buried in there, which is, you know, why I thought I would link it. Hell, it's got instructions at the bottom for setting up Windows Terminal if you feel so inclined. But you don't have to do that. You can just use regular command prompt. But anyways, I thought I would throw this out there just because it's a handy knowledge base article to keep in your back pocket if you ever need to mess with the Linux install on a Windows box. But of course, that's all I've got. Listen to the stream. We're always working on it. Peer Decking every Thursday, the Galaxy 15 radio site and subreddit. In the IRC tonight, CyberLard, Cycros, Madman, myself, and Sardonyx. Madman, closing thoughts.
I remember when my OS didn't try to sell me things. When all it did was open up programs that I wanted to run on my computer.
I'm seriously building a backup cache of Amigas and single board computers running, you know, probably very limited Linuxes. Because I have a feeling at some point I'm going to give up on modern computing for anything but work and live in the past. Are you? Closing thoughts.
Well, I'm fucking going outside, dude. When I've had enough, fuck it. Power button goes off. I'm walking away. Oh, I'll be done. I'll have had enough.
Oh. But you can do both. You can build an old machine and still go outside. That way we can play Star Trek Armada together again and go fishing.
Hey, I was figuring out how to play Zork over a fucking ham radio link. So, you know, I'm going to hook a Baofeng up to a cyber deck and play probably text adventure games.
Yeah.
I'm not gonna go that far to the back. I like the past, but I'm gonna stop at Oregon Trail. Pac-Man. You know, when video games had video.
Go ahead, Aryu. You got stepped on there.
Oh, no, it's all right. Yeah, fuck it, dude. When I've had enough, I'm going outside. I won't come back. Not in any form like today.
just wander off.
I'm serious, man. I've just had enough of it. Everything just tries to sell you shit. When I want to actually find something real, it's not there, or it's heavily censored or not available in your country. Like, just fucking work, goddammit. Open up the program I want, fucking work. Okay?
Well, unfortunately, like we said, the internet's lost.
I think when Real ID comes about, that'll be the day I walk away. I don't think it's too far away. You'll have to actually log in, actually use the internet.
Log into your ISP or something?
Yeah, something like that, Real ID. Then you'll just be tracked everywhere you go. You won't be able to pirate anything.
Please drink a verification can.
Exactly. Yeah, no, fuck that. I'll go build small motors and shit. Fuck around with drones or something. I don't know. Find some new hobby.
All right. Sound effects time.
We're sorry. Your call cannot be completed as dialed.
Shut up, Wesley.